It's going to determine what the future will bring, and I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Michael Colazzi from Silver Sword International, and Michael is a movie producer and director and artist who has come up with an amazing story and put together a film. And it's called The Rape of the Soul. It's really a documentary about embedded images. Embedded pornographic images in Catholic art. Now, first of all, Michael is coming from a Catholic point of view. He's conservative Catholic, and he's very, very concerned about what's happening in the church as he's tried to expose this totally vile corruption really intent upon implanting these images in people's subconscious. So with that as a background, Michael, thank you so very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Stan. Thanks for having me again.
Well, why don't you just go ahead now? This is an entirely different audience, so you just go ahead and tell your whole story.
Well, essentially, we were making a family-oriented feature film called Intimate Fear, which is about a dysfunctional family and one that looks to hope in both spiritual and physical fear of intimacy. Those are the issues that were plaguing this particular family. And we were setting everything up to film in Toronto, Ontario, and we just had to film a couple of scenes in Catholic churches, so I didn't think it was a problem, me being Catholic, and we tried to get permission to do so, but we were declined permission, and the motto of Silver Sword International is merging media with morality, so I thought that something had to be wrong, and upon investigation, we found out that the Archdiocese of Toronto was requisitioning, approving, promoting, and executing what I call satanic pornography, which is essentially works of art, either new works of art requisitioned by new artists or classic art that is used to program the mind subconsciously, to put demonic imagery, occult symbols, and sexual symbols, and combine that with Jesus and religious scenes. And I got to the bottom of this finally, and it turns out that the person in charge, the director of communications, Suzanne Scorsone, did indeed requisition the material with through a web designer at the Archdiocese, and it turned out that after further investigation, it came into our beloved United States in other organizations. The largest Catholic publisher of worship materials, the Oregon Catholic Press, which has hymnals and missals in 2 out of every 3 U.S. Catholic churches. And, of course, the global Catholic network, EWTN, was not exempt, as they have used the same imagery on their website.
But now that had nothing to do with Sister Angelica. Certainly she had nothing to do. She was even concerned about this influence, wasn't she?
That's correct, yes. Mother Angelica had no idea what was going on. In fact, I'm a big fan of hers, and the network has slightly changed over the years, but unbeknownst to her, there have been people who have put the material on the site, and it just kept growing from there. So we backed into a tremendous amount of scandalous artwork designed to program people without their consent.
And a lot of this is really aimed at children. It's, of course, it's aimed at everybody, but there really is people who relish in the obscene, in the pornographic, and in the demonic. And you know, they will use the recurrent number 666 over and over again. They understand exactly what they're doing. The great tragedy is the average individual looks at the films, shrugs, and has no idea that these ideas are being implanted in the subconscious forever. We'll be right back with Michael. Well, Michael, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story from there?
Well, essentially, we had another movie on our hands, and what I did was I put the investigation together. It took quite a bit of time, and you know, with a tremendous amount of prayer, I felt like Jesus was utilizing my talents as an artist, because I've actually been identifying and extracting embedded images in art for over 20 years, so it was real easy for me to find these things, and I felt like it was time to say something and do something about it, so I wrote the narration for Rape of the Soul, which is a feature film documentary, and it was just premiered about 10 days ago, and Dr. Stan, you're one of the experts inside the film. The other experts are Dr. Judith Reisman, which is one of your friends, and Dr. Wilson Brian Key, the author of many books on the particular subject of embedded imagery, Dr. Mark Oster, who is the former president of the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis, and it was something that I felt like we had to do. And the film was released, doing very well, growing in new theaters coming up this weekend on the 31st, and intends to grow even further from there. So what we've essentially done is, for the first time, we've taken the art and we show it to you, and then right before your eyes, we identify the imagery that's inside it and extract it and pull it out right in front of you so you can get to see these things. Unfortunately, yes, it is sexual. There are sexual images. There are the phallic symbols on Jesus and sex and this kind of thing, but all the way back, dating back from a historical perspective, and to the new artists of today that utilize the art.
Well, Chris, this is nothing new. This is some of this artistry, or some of these things. There's a crucifix there that goes back to the time of St. Francis of Assisi, and that had been hidden for, seven centuries and only recently brought out?
Yes, correct, 700 years. One of the most famous crucifixes, one of the most famous of all time in Catholic art, anyway, is the San Damiano crucifix. And this crucifix is revered by Catholics. It is St. Francis of Assisi's crucifix, the one he prayed to, and it supposedly spoke to him and told him to rebuild churches. But he misheard this message from this cross, and he actually went and rebuilt physical churches, which he wasn't supposed to be doing. God said to rebuild his church, and he didn't quite get the message. Now, I bring this up in the film because, you know, crosses and statues don't talk to us, and this is a lesson to be learned, because that particular crucifix does have the underside of a penis and testicles right on the abdomen of Christ.
And, of course, the sisters have recognized this, and that's why they hid it for so many centuries, and then somebody recently ordered that this would be once again put in display. Oh, hold that thought. We'll be here back in just a moment with Michael Colazzi. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just talking about one of the more famous crucifixes. It's very famous in Catholic art. It was something that St. Francis of Assisi, you know, we're talking about, 1200, 1300, somewhere in there, and he prayed to this crucifix. The sisters in one of the orders recognized that this was terribly obscene art, and they actually hid this for 700 years. Only recently did somebody give instructions or orders that it suddenly be put on public display, and with so much of this art, unless somebody points it out to you, you don't know what you're seeing. And when somebody points it out to you, it becomes so obvious. And what these evil and wicked people have done down through the centuries is hide their symbols in plain sight. And, of course, we've talked about this in the past. This is a standard technique. It certainly is not limited to the Catholic Church. It's limited to all art. We see the same sort of thing functioning within the Protestant Church as well today. But, of course, this has been going on for already hundreds and hundreds of years in the Catholic Church. And anyway, pick up the story there, Michael, as you begin to evaluate this. And this is not just one, but a number of these, the various very special crucifixes that have been so famous in Catholic art, have the same sort of symbology in it.
Yeah, that's correct. As a matter of fact, in the 12th century, when the San Damiano crucifix was painted, it was painted by an unknown Italian artist, because if they had actually put their name on this, they certainly wouldn't have made it. It's incredibly blasphemous. And a cross just like that is called the Bigallo crucifix, which is right now being displayed in the Art Institute of Chicago. And it's the same thing. It has boxes on the left and the right, and a saint on the right, and a saint on the left, and they're gesturing toward the phallic symbol. They're virtually identical. They're painted at the same time, both by unknown Italian artists. It's a one copycat of the other because of the sexual stimulation that you receive in the subconscious fashion. And then even today, the Oregon Catholic Press, as I mentioned earlier, the largest publisher of hymnals and missals in the United States, two out of every three pews and churches in this country. And they also came out with the Companion Missal, just a year or so ago, And they have another crucifix on there, once again, saints on the left, saints on the right, and there's another underside of penis testicles right on the abdomen of Christ. So it continues even into this day to put the sex mixed with horror in other imagery together, and you receive a blasphemous underlying message, but you're sexually stimulated to accept such a message.
Well, now, of course, didn't the Oregon diocese there have some terrible problems with pedophilia, and didn't they actually, there was so much corruption there that they actually went bankrupt or into receivership?
Yeah, that's correct. As a matter of fact, 2 years ago, the Oregon Archdiocese, the Archdiocese of Portland, went bankrupt, first archdiocese in history to do so. And they had no choice because Bishop Vlasny, who runs the archdiocese now and had to declare bankruptcy, had received it from Cardinal George before he was Cardinal George Francis George in Chicago. And prior to that, it was Archbishop Levada, William Levada, who you probably know in the news, was just made a cardinal by the Pope and was, of course, promoted just prior to that to the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith. So he's the defender of the faith of the Church. But it was Levada for many years that shuffled pedophiles around and covered up sex abuse scandals at the Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon for years.
And, of course, eventually then, when it all came out, why there were so many suits brought that they simply had to declare bankruptcy?
That's correct. The suits were so heavy that after George came in there, he hushed it up the best way he could. He got promoted to come to Chicago after Cardinal Bernardin. And then Bishop Vlasny was in there. He couldn't hold it anymore. So he declared bankruptcy, first time it's ever happened. But that didn't go away. The lawsuits are still there. I think there's about 150 people involved. And it was so intense that they actually had, they subpoenaed Levada, now Cardinal Levada, to come back to San Francisco, where he went after Portland, and he had to undergo a testimony, I believe, twice. So he's under oath and had to be deposed on what he knew about these things, which essentially was everything. I don't know exactly what he ended up saying, but it's ironic because it is he that is promoted to the one of the highest, heaviest positions at the Vatican, the defender of the faith.
Now, of course, you've actually tried to contact the Vatican. You tried to get the various members of the hierarchy of the Church. I know you went to a Monsignor in Canada, and he told you what to do, and when you tried to do it, why, you were blocked at every turn trying to report this, trying to do something about it, trying to get the leaders of the Church to take a position against this obscenity that is detracting so much from the faith.
That's correct. I was trying to do things in an official fat capacity. I was trying to do things internally. I didn't want to grandstand. I had hoped this was just one painting from the beginning at the Archdiocese of Toronto. Then I found it on a calendar after that. A lot of sex and horror on a calendar given out in the Archdiocese of Toronto. And I did go to Monsignor Schoenenbach, who's at the CCCB, just like the U.S. CCB here in the United States, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. That was Canadian. And he helped me out. He told me to go to the Papal Nuncio, which is the ambassador to Canada from the Vatican, and they kept passing me off to new people. They never wanted to write anything to me. They never wanted to acknowledge anything. And then I finally went back to the Cardinal in Cardinal Ambrosic in Toronto, and then finally to the Vatican. So I went to four different offices all the way to the top, warning them, faxing them, reporting everything. And nothing would ever be confirmed or denied. As you say in the film, Stan, that if you confirm or deny, then you know you acknowledge as something a problem that existed, and they didn't want to do that.
And, of course, so eventually you put together this motion picture so the people, the average individual, can actually see what this is about. And, of course, the Catholic Church is, I'm sure, is doing everything they can to ignore it. The last thing they want is for you to be able to get wide circulation of your motion picture, and yet it's already opened in at least 10 films, theaters, and I understand it's opening in other theaters all across America.
That's correct. They've been trying to keep it as quiet as possible, but, you know, we have Jesus on our side here, Stan, as you know, and This is his project, and it's something that has to be told. I think that Jesus is in pain. You see him in ways you don't want to see him. You see him with, you know, phallic symbols coming out of him in places that aren't supposed to be. You see him performing sex acts. Again, this is cartoon-like stuff that's aimed at kids. It's not like, you know, pornography like you would be reporting or you'd see on the news or something. It's artwork, but it's still pornography, it's still sex, it's still demonic, and there are things that are mixed inside. And a film like this has never been done. The story is very painful. And my fellow Catholics, after seeing the reviews of the film, are up in arms. It's not like we're going to get many Catholics supporting us because they think it's an attack against the church. And it's not. It's a surgical strike. The people in the film, the perps, are named. They're identified. It's laid out like a prosecuting attorney lays out a case, bringing in the witnesses. I have all the documents. I have the pictures. So we have a tremendous amount of evidence. But people are making comments about the film. They haven't even seen it yet. I mean, it's been in several theaters, and it's going to continue to grow. But people make comments on attacking the film, but they haven't even had a chance to see the film to begin with.
Well, it's really very powerfully done. It's very well done. It's a film that hopefully will make people think, and certainly I would not have participated in it had it been a Catholic bashing film, because I just don't believe in that. I believe that we may have differences as far as some of the things that Catholics believe that Protestants don't, but the important thing is we all worship Jesus Christ and accept the divinity of Jesus Christ, which is the essence of Christianity. So anyway, certainly the film is powerful. Now you have Dr. William Brian Keyes. Would you like to talk a little bit about the part that he plays and the part that the other people that you have, and basically this is based upon interviews that interspersed with the powerful, powerful films. You will actually see this art. And the recurrent use of the A for Antichrist, 666, having the demonic manifestation of the beast, Satan himself. So the people, these artists who are doing this, as you point out, the artist knows exactly what he's doing. Every detail is just exactly as he wants it. Nothing happens by accident.
That's correct. Speaking as an artist, I mean, out of all the experts in the film, we all bring our area of expertise, and I bring the area of art expertise, and I can tell you that all art is planned, that we plan every single minute detail to whatever we're doing. We just don't throw people around or paint around or words around, and that's the way that it happened. That's not what we do. We plan it all, and the artists plan it all. And when you have a single image, a single frame image, where you have a painting or a photograph, we only have one shot to get it right. So we have to really make sure that we plan ahead. And once we do then submit that particular item, if it's a photograph, then you have, today with technology, today have airbrushing and other things that could come in and enhance the embeds or add the embeds at that particular point. And Dr. Wilson Brian Key, who's written 5 books on embedded imagery and art for over 40 years and has been sort of a mentor for me for the 20 so years that I've been doing this, is in the film and discusses advertising and discusses what the cause and effect is and how the embeds work, but also the fovea of the eye. I mean, everybody has an ability to accept the conscious elements of what they're seeing, but it's only the size of a pinhead. So when you're looking at something, you have this little cluster of cells in your eye, and it's the size of a pinhead, a head of a pin, and when you look at something, you take in everything subconsciously, but you have to strike that fovea on the very points of what you're looking at. And we just don't do that, so we can't absorb that consciously, and therefore we say, okay, I saw what I just did. So if you're looking in a room, you see everything in the room, but you can't obviously remember everything because you didn't strike this fovea on everything that's there. So there is a bit of a scientific, physical element of accepting the images consciously. And Dr. Key does go over that as well as many other issues in the film.
And, of course, they have Dr. Judith Reisman. We'll talk a little bit more about Dr. Reisman. She's certainly done seminal work on Alfred Kinsey. Alfred Kinsey was a pervert and a homosexual and certainly worked very closely with pedophiles. And whether he was one himself, we do know that he worked very closely even with Nazi pedophiles. But they can't let the American people know that. After all, he's the great scientist. Of course, nobody tells you he was financed by the Rockefeller Foundation, and their purpose was to change the moral fabric of our society. They've done a great job. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Michael Colace, and we're talking about the film The Rape of the Soul, full-length film. How long is the film, Michael?
It is 140 minutes. It is normally films around the two-hour mark are healthy. This is 2 hours and 20 minutes because it is literally jam-packed with information. And again, films like this never been made. Tremendous amount of pictures and expert testimony. We talked about Dr. Key and then Dr. Judith Reisman, as you had mentioned. the most, the finest authority on pornography and its negative and harmful effects, child psychology, and she discusses how pornographic images harm people, especially children, and that priests themselves are exposed to pornography in the seminaries, and told that this is okay, and then they're in charge of children after that. So it just fuels the pedophile fire that is raging through the church with respect to priestly abuse. And then Dr. Mark Oster, the former president of the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis, discusses how you become hypnotized, mesmerized, from looking at particular pictures and items and totems and these things, and how they can be used in order to get what the perpetrator wants. So when you have a predatory individual, that person can use these things to get what they want. And what they want, essentially, the grand total of things in the whole scheme of things is your soul. They want to get your soul, and they'll use these things and put them in the areas that are supposed to be calming influences, like in church. You're supposed to be open in church. You're supposed to trust everything that you see in church. But when you get there and you have these elements right in church, in the pews of the churches, in the stained glass, as you mentioned, Stan, and you are also one of the experts discussing geopolitics and discussing spiritual warfare and the spiritual side of things, you do so expertly well on your programs. You do the same thing in the film and discussing embedded imagery. And it is everywhere. Stained glass, paintings, you name it. And there's some incredible things that we show in the film that even sets up, unfortunately, some of the black masses that are said in some Catholic churches. There is a church that we show in the film that has the horned satanic S and the circle and the dot in the center, which are occult symbols, and they also have sixes in them, and all in a red ceiling on the top of the altar. Now, just if you go to Mass here, I've been to this church in Naperville, Illinois, and you go to this church, and it's a regular church, but you know, it doubles as a heck of a place for a black mass should they want to have one there. So they're very disturbing images, especially for Catholics to see. Catholics don't want to believe it's there, but it certainly is.
In fact, one of the interesting things was you showed how marble could be actually cut, and you could actually create a demonic faces. And, of course, you have to plan to do that and take these two pieces of marble and turn them around and actually create faces or images. And some of those are truly demonic. I thought that was fascinating.
Oh, yeah. The marble elements in the film are quite fascinating. Most people couldn't possibly fathom that you can use natural elements because, you know, as an artist, art is artificial. That's where we get the word. Art is artificial, and we create something out of nothing. That's what we do as creators. But when you have a natural element like rock, like marble, like wood, you can actually take a slab of marble and you can slice that slab of marble because the veins go through the marble. So you're getting another almost the same image underneath what you just cut, if you cut it for a quarter inch or half inch, what have you.
Hold that thought right there.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Michael Colace, and we're talking about his film, Rape of the Soul, and it's being shown in theaters all across the country, and hopefully, of course, one of these days it'll be out in DVD. That'll be some time from now, but if you can possibly get the chance to see the film, you'll be really amazed. It's exciting to see this on the big screen, and really it's a great job of bringing out all the various aspects as much as you can. I'm sure there's probably a great deal more information than Michael had, but with the limited time that he had, and that's 2 hours and about 10 minutes, 2 hours and 20 minutes, 2 hours and
20 minutes, yeah,
right, 2 hours and 20 minutes, and you will be enthralled. You will just be gripped with this. We actually have seen the film twice. We flew back to New York City for the opening, and it was fascinating to see all of this together. I'd never have had any idea exactly what this was all going to be. I just simply had gone back and done some interviews with Michael, but to see how it was all woven together, you did a great job, and something that holds people fascinated for the 2 hour and 20 minutes.
That's true. Most people, in fact, the Motion Picture Association of America, just to let you know that this is not some rinky-dink film that some independent company came up with. This is you know, we're playing with the big boys. This is we're in major theaters, major theater chains, AMC, Regal, and others around the country. And the Motion Picture Association of America, the MPAA, that gives out ratings, now did give the rating R to the film, and rightfully so, because there is sexual references and imagery in it. But they also really enjoyed the film and gave me a call and gave me their truthful, honest rating. And they said the exact same thing you just said, Stan, which I didn't mention to you in the past. But they said, you know, we were totally on this film from the beginning to the end. Nobody yawned. Nobody got up to get coffee. Nobody did anything. And we believed everybody in there. It was incredibly fascinating. We'll never look at art the same way again. So that's a heck of an endorsement. I think anybody watching this will find it to be the same way. Because people complain that films are the same, that they've seen this film before, but not Rape of the Soul. Rape of the Soul is something you've never seen before, connecting pedophile scandals, homosexual problems in the church, and both historical and contemporary art, embedded images in art, where we literally take the images and you're looking at this picture and say, okay, what's wrong with that? We're literally talking about it, and then right before your eyes, pulling the image right out of there, which you should have been seeing all along consciously, but only saw subconsciously. And it's quite an amazing thing for a person to see. And reserving, hopefully, comment before until they see it. Great to see it on the big screen, though, because it makes quite an impact.
And, of course, I think the significant thing is the technology is there now that you can actually pull these things out so you can actually look at them. Otherwise, you just have to put an arrow on something. But fortunately, the technology that's available, it's very easy now to see exactly what's going on. And I hope that after you've seen this motion picture, if you get a chance to see it, you will begin looking at things very carefully, because, believe me, there are people out there who would corrupt the souls of our people. There are people out there who hate Christianity, and of course, the best way to destroy Christianity is not attacking it from without, but attacking it from within. And unfortunately, we have people working within the Catholic Church and within the Protestant Church and all denominations who have an entirely different agenda. They know what they're doing. But the last thing they want is for the American people or for the people of the various faiths to understand that they hide their emblems right in plain sight. And unless somebody points them out to you, you're not going to see them. But your subconscious knows what they are, don't they, Michael?
Oh, absolutely. The subconscious mind sees everything. And they know it. The artists know it. I'm, again, speaking to you as an artist, your audience, and we know that you're going to see everything, whether it's a still image or it's a film, and you take it in subconsciously. You take in everything. It's kind of like the shutter of a lens. And all it takes is one blink. You don't even have to be reinforced. You don't even have to see a message in a hymnal. For example, the Oregon Catholic Press, by far, in my opinion, probably the worst in the entire film, because their music issues from 2004, 2005, 2006. The 2004 music issue had a suicide message in it, aimed at kids.
I know that. Now, this was actually the hymnals that you're speaking of.
That's correctly, the hymnals.
Right. And so our telephone number, of course, if you'd like to give us a call, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. If you'd like to talk to Michael, he's been working at this for 7 years, just put his whole heart and soul into it. And, of course, it is not an attack on the church. It's an attack on the evil people within the church who are doing everything they can to destroy it. And with that, of course, their hope is to destroy Christianity. So, we'll be back in just a moment. If you have a question, comment, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I know I talked to a gentleman today who told me that the film is actually playing in Boston, and he's actually been to see it, and he's going to be taking people there every day. I think it'll be up there through Thursday, and so he's going to take people. He said that, you know, the Catholics he's taken, he's coming from a Catholic perspective, but the Catholics he's taken have really had their eyes opened, a sudden realization that these satanic forces are are working within the church.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I should announce this on your show. The Boston Globe did call me today, and they did want the pictures, the photographs, the publicity stills from the film of us, Stan. And I believe they're going to be doing a piece on this, and it may come out as early as tomorrow. So if those want to see Boston Globe article, they should check the website tomorrow. Very well could be out by tomorrow at bostonglobe.com. And we are going to stay at the AMC Theater at Harvard Square at 10 Church Street, right smack in the middle of Cambridge in Boston area, all throughout the weekend. So it's going to be this entire weekend even further. So we expect it to be running there for quite some time.
I'm sure you really must be getting then a fairly good response to be able to keep it there.
Oh, yeah, sure, especially Boston. I felt like the reason why we opened it in certain cities like Boston and Portland and Chicago, for example, or, you know, these are the cities that have really been pinched and hurt by this initially, and I felt out of respect, just especially for Boston, that we really needed to give them the first look at this and, you know, get them, get their feet wet and go from there. We open up on Friday, the 31st, in Dallas, Fort Worth, and Orange County, and also again in New York, in Queens, New York, where I'm originally from, and we'll continue to grow from there.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Kirk, who's calling us from Santa Cruz. Kirk, are you there?
Yes.
Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I was. I saw another guest that had been on the show, Jane Whiting, who had been raised in the occult and is very familiar with it.
Right.
And I'm an historian, and I love to visit the old California Mission. So I brought a book to her, The Decoration of California Missions. And as I showed her page after page, she commented on Satanic Cross, the Scottish thistle, which is an occult symbol, the red and the white rose. And but then the one that really shocked me was that the Lucifer's eye in the triangle, it's behind the altar in so many Catholic churches. And she told me the rays behind it signify anal sex. And, you know, when you're praying in a Catholic church, you're looking right at this eye with the rays behind it.
And nobody, of course, recognizes what that really is. Hold on, we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, certainly, Kirk, I think you would really enjoy this film. It's done a very, very good job of getting the information out. Anything else? Did you have a question for our guest?
Well, I'm just appalled at that concept that when one prays to the altar, that they're praying to the eye of Satan in the middle of a homosexual symbol.
They do not realize that. That's the thing. Everything is done, you know, to confuse the people, but those ideas are implanted in their subconscious.
Yeah, it's an incredible evil. It's a, you know, and I'm wondering, you know, does this go back to the Babylonian mystery religions when the church was made the official church of the empire? Does this go back to Constantine?
Remember, the Babylonians were even far before that. But there's been a conscious effort, I'm sure, to infiltrate the church. What are your thoughts on that, Michael?
Well, I think that there's certainly been a conscious effort, and if you even go to the Vatican, for example, there unfortunately is occult symbols and artwork, you know, throughout. I mean, to be quite honest, there's no good reason to have an obelisk sitting in the middle of St. Peter's Square, for example. There are things throughout various different churches, and I've seen the eye and the triangle in the past. People just don't know what those are, and they are improper. They're not supposed to be there, but they're there for a reason. It's not like you know, the priest had no idea it was there. I mean, priests are extremely intelligent. They're trained in good versus evil. They know the deal. And to let things like that in the church, it's on purpose. It's premeditated.
And that's the same eye, of course, we see on the back of the dollar bill. Hey, thanks so much for calling.
I had another question there.
Okay, go ahead.
Has your guest been able to track back origins, sources of this, and are there secret cults or societies, secret demonic cults or societies in the priesthood like Adam Vissoff with the Illuminati?
Well, of course, he was not in the Catholic Church. His purpose was to destroy it from without. But do you feel that there may be secret societies or secret satanic groups within the church?
Well, I think that, first of all, there's a reason for secret societies being something that we should probably frown upon, because there's no such story as Jesus and the secret society. Jesus spoke in public, and that's what I'm doing here. We're doing here, Stan, is we're speaking the truth in public. So if you want to combat secret societies, you have to do the opposite, which is to do what they don't do, which is to speak the truth in public. And anytime you do things in closed doors, behind closed doors in the dark, you know, the Holy Spirit's not there. So it certainly does happen. There's no doubt about it. There unfortunately are evil people in the church at the highest levels of the church. And unfortunately, they do engage in acts that are satanic, demonic, and have to do with various secret societies. There's no doubt about that. It's a minority, but it's a powerful one.
And, of course, certainly in the movie I talk about my interviews with Malachi Martin and certainly how it was Pope Paul VI who talked about the smoke of Satan circulating above the church. And then, of course, Malachi Martin had written one of his books, The Windswept House, about a satanic ceremony in the basement of the Vatican. Of course, that was a fictional book. But off the air, he told me that it had really taken place. And there was a human sacrifice, not in the Vatican, but to correspond with that, the one that was held in the Vatican, and of course the one that was held elsewhere. Hey, thanks so much, Kirk. And let's basically, before we go on, Michael, I want you to give out your website so people would know how to get in touch with you and find out where the motion picture is playing.
Sure. It's very simple. It's www.rapeofthesoul.com. So it's the title of the film.com. One word, rapeofthesoul.com. And you can navigate through the site. The trailer is on there. The trailer is about 2 minutes and 30 seconds, and you'll see everybody on there, including Dr. Stan. And some images. We only show the images that are sort of demonic images, and it's G-rated, because even though the film is R-rated, we have to put a G-rated on the website, so you're not going to see any of the sexual imagery in the trailer. But the trailer is quite interesting. It's sort of like a musical montage of things, and it's built around a child's choir. It's deeply meant, and you will see the locations on the location page and all of the experts and all of the biographies in there.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Ray, who's calling us from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I just wanted to say to Michael that I am a Catholic, and I'm very disturbed about what you're saying about these obscene images. I've never seen anything. Now, I go to St. Joseph's here in Capitola, but I've never run across anything that was disturbing. But I do know, for one thing, I know that there's a, I hate to say it, but one of the bishops is a homosexual, at least one of them.
I think you're going to find that more often than not with respect to the bishop's sexual orientation. But
yeah.
I should say the reason why you don't see some of the images, though, is because you're not seeing them consciously. You don't know exactly where to look.
Uh-huh.
But the film is educational. It's
yeah.
not just storytelling. It's not just for healing, which is the number one reason to heal the violation that's occurred from this. But it's also educational, because we tell you how to find embeds. The low-level ones, those 0, 1, 2, 3 low-level embeds, where you can look. And as you go into the film, you start looking around at the pictures that we'll start showing, and you start seeing some things, even things I don't even point out, because I want you to find them yourself.
Well, there's another thing, too. I was very disturbed, because they had a sort of a rock and roll type Christian group at the altar here in Santa Cruz, and I was very disturbed about that.
Well, you ought to be.
That happened once, about 2 years ago it happened, and then it happened again recently, and there's some stuff, there's some major stuff going on as far as in Capitola, in the church that I go to in Capitola, but that's very disturbing.
I hope that if you can't get to the motion picture, is it still over in Milpitas there, Michael?
Actually, no. It's moved from Milpitas, so it's going to go to other cities. And once again, we give everybody a chance to get to the opening cities. But as we grow wider, you'll probably end up seeing it in the same area again, probably at another theater.
Okay. Anyway, Ray, just keep listening. And the thing is that
what to look for, you know.
The, you. Their whole idea is to hide these things in plain sight. We have a book written by Manly P. Hall, who is a Satanist, and he brags about how they have always hidden their things in plain sight, and the people can't see them. Once you see the images, why you wonder why everybody can't see them. But and of course, this is what it's not just in Catholic art; it's in every aspect of our society. But the last thing you'd expect it would be in the Catholic Church.
Well, one last comment. I know of one thing. I know that the Satanists come into. I know they come into the Catholic Church. I know, and they even have come into St. Joseph's. And they will. What they will do is they will hold the wafer in their mouths, and then they'll hold it in their mouths. And when they get outside of the church, they spit it out.
Sure.
They desecrate the mass that way.
And of course, they hate Christianity. And this is the thing: until we understand that there really is a spiritual battle going on, we can't be effective.
I'm sure there is.
Anything else, Ray?
Yeah, that's about it.
God bless. Thanks very much. And let's go to Mike calling from Santa Cruz again. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Mike, does you have a question?
Yeah, hi, Stan. I wanted to ask your guest about the broken cross. I tuned in late. Hope I didn't miss anything. But Pope John Paul II and Benedict have held up this cross from out, you know, where they look out from the balcony across the square there in front of St. John, St. Peter's. But it's an obscene cross. As I understand it, it's the cross of the Illuminati.
Actually, that cross is nicknamed the Bent Cross.
The Bent Cross, that's right.
Cross. And the way that the story goes essentially is that it was used by Satanists in the early centuries after Christ, and it was obliterated. But after Vatican II, Pope Paul VI walked out with it again for the first time. Pope Paul VI. And then after that, it was carried by Pope Paul VI and all the way to Pope Benedict XVI now. So there's no reason to carry that cross. In my opinion, it is a mockery of Christ once again. It's Christ hanging on this cross with his knees bent out and his arms really long, like he's a waif. And it was meant in the past as a mockery of Christ. And to all of a sudden bring this cross out after, you know, Stan, we talked about 700 years for that San Damiano crucifix. We're talking now, what is that, like 1400 years, 1300 years since that bent cross has been seen, and all of a sudden it came out again. There used to be a regular crucifix that was carried by the popes, and then this one all of a sudden comes out after Vatican II. So there is some reason for that. Certainly it's a symbol that should not be utilized by the church.
Well, as I understand it, it's when they hold it up in public, and I have newspaper clippings where he's holding it in front of thousands of people, when they're displaying it this way, it's an announcement of actually who is in control of the Vatican.
I don't disbelieve you there. I think that there obviously is an evil influence at the highest levels of the church. I think that the Pope, Joseph Ratzinger, is a good guy. It's just that he has people around him that force him to do and say things that he doesn't necessarily want to do. He does not have automatic control, autonomous control, like popes of the past. Neither did John Paul II. And neither did Pope Paul VI. So it's different now, and Vatican II had a lot to do with it. Certainly that's an entirely different subject, but certainly you're touching on it.
And I think we only have to remember what happened to John Paul I. He was in 33 days, and everybody, I think, in the know realizes he was poisoned. Of course, according to Malachi Martin, and we have a four-tape set of interviews with Malachi, and he tells the story about when John Paul II was going to be, before John Paul II was really actually picked by the College of Cardinals, they had actually picked another cardinal to become the Pope, and on his way to the altar or wherever it was that he was going to accept this, he was passed a piece of paper that said, if you accept the papacy, why, of course, you will be killed, and all of your family will be killed. Needless to say, he turned it down. Now, that's what Malachi Martin says. Is it true? I don't know. But I don't know any reason why he would want to tell me something wasn't true. Anything else, Mike?
Well, I wanted to ask Michael if he's heard of a book called The Broken Cross by Piers Compton.
No,
a Catholic historian. So he's from that camp, raising complaints, I think similar to yours. Only he wrote a book on this one symbol, whereas you've done a whole movie on many symbols.
Oh, I think you'll find the movie fascinating, and when I get it, Mike, I'll let you borrow it.
Yeah, I really want to see it. Just for the audience, I was raised in Catholicism. I'm well aware of these things, having studied back into it, and I've been to St. Joseph's here in Capitola for the listener, for the caller who was just on before me, and yes, they do have problems over there. And if he would like to get in touch with me, he can do that by calling you, and you can give him my number.
Okay, fine. Well, we got troubles in all the churches today. We got problems in the Catholic Church. We got problems in the Protestant Church. Christianity is under attack. God bless. Thanks,
yes, sir.
Mike. Let's go to Michael calling from Houston. Hi, Michael. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Michael, how are you tonight?
Very good. And this is a very interesting program you're having, Dr. Stan. I appreciate the insight into this subject. I've always been bothered by sort of an artistic liberty that comes into churches just in all forms. They invent ways of expressing things, and of course in other words, sort of an expression of ego that what's gone before is not good enough, and I can do a better job. And of course, in art, in music, it's bothered the church nearly from the very beginning. The Arian heresy in, the 200s and 300s, was sort of carried on by invented music.
Right, and of course the thing is that music and art and the sculpture and architecture should all honor God. That's its purpose.
Yeah.
But of course when you have these things within the church and they don't honor God, you have to ask, what is the motivation of the artist? Because the artist knows exactly what he's doing. It's just that the average individual doesn't. Anything else? Did you have a question for our guest?
There's no question about, I'd like to, I didn't hear the first of the program. I'm very anxious to,
It'll be archived.
The movie, and is there any written works that it's sort of the basis and foundation for it?
Well, do you have access to the internet?
Yes.
Well, of course, you can go to then rapeofthesoul.com. That's www.rapeofthesoul.com, and you can actually see the trailer.
I'll do that, and thank you very much, Dr. Stan.
God bless you.
Michael, keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Do you have any comment at all on what Michael was saying? Michael, do you have any comment on what Michael from Houston was saying, I should say?
Well, essentially, I think that everything, it's offensive to no matter who is watching and who's looking at the particular art. I mean, as a matter of fact, what just happened as we were speaking, I told my office that if anybody who was listening on the program that was emailing the office, and they actually did just this moment, Stan. So somebody actually emailed and wanted a substantiation of evil at the highest levels of the church about the opposition of authority. I think that the main crux of everything, of people who are responding and want answers, is that they have to see the film. There's been such a tremendous reply from people who are looking for alternative explanations of things. And the film is laid out, like I mentioned earlier, like a prosecuting attorney lays out a case. The witnesses are called, and the letters are all there. I mean, there's so many letters that we have in the film, written documentation, as well as the evidence itself. And I think I can answer just about anybody's question who wants to see what's the proof of what you're looking at. The proof is in the pudding, as they say, but you need to actually see the film. It's in its entirety. And it's the best way that I could explain it, and we will make the release as wide as possible to help you with that.
And I think you've done a yeoman's job of trying to bring this out, and I'm hoping it will help people to understand what we're really up against. You know, what brought me into Christianity was the realization that there was organized evil in the world. There was organized evil, and then there must be something on the other side. It was that search for an understanding that, of course, led me to a personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ. And we're hoping that perhaps what you've done will cause people to draw closer to our Lord, to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle, being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And you've heard me say it many times, and if you listen to my programs, you'll hear me say it again. But that's the very crux of what this is all about. Christianity is under attack today. And whether it be in the Catholic Church, or the Baptist Church, or the Lutheran Church, or the Presbyterian Church, there is an effort to destroy Christianity and Judaism as well. So we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up our program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Michael, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What are your thoughts that you want to leave with our listeners tonight?
Well, I want to leave with the listeners that obviously the biggest issue, Stan, is one you mentioned about the spiritual battle. I don't think people understand that as much as they should. We're sort of desensitized by the sex and violence that is throughout our society today. And people, especially in the United States, they have to see in order to believe. The emotional element of religion is very powerful. And we get a lot of responses from people because they don't want to have the bad news. They don't want to hear or see the bad news that's coming up. They know kind of that it's existing. They hope that it doesn't have to happen. Dr. Wilson Brian Key says in the film that people just really want to believe. And when somebody sort of pulls the wool over their eyes, they get disappointed in that, and they get upset. They get angry, and then they say, well, it's not there. I don't want to see that. I can't believe somebody would ever do something like that. And unfortunately, when it comes to my fellow Catholic brothers and sisters, we suffer from what I call good Catholic syndrome, which is dangerous, because good Catholic syndrome is a carpet-sweeping phenomenon, which means everything is... you can't harm the church. Everything has to get swept under the rug. There are very few Catholic crusaders or warriors that are literally willing to do something based on the evidence that's presented. Most Catholics would turn the other cheek, or would hide it, or cover it up, or hand it over to a higher authority in the church that covers it again as well. So I think people have to understand that in a spiritual battle, knowing that there is evil in different places in the church, that you have to fight. You have to stand up and fight. And in the film, we have two closing arguments. Everybody gets to make two statements, and we make two of them. And mine is essentially stand up and fight. Fight the good fight. A spiritual battle, you have to do it. And people have to understand that. There's no way around it, especially if you have the information in your hands. Because, I mean, we meet Jesus. We have a judgment day, every one of us, right? And I certainly didn't want to have that meeting with Jesus, knowing that I'm an artist, I have this particular gift and talent. We all use our gifts and talents and supposed to utilize them properly, that I had to do this, because I don't want to have the conversation that, Michael, here, I'd be giving you this information, and you're a filmmaker, and you could have told everybody, but you didn't do anything about it. So I want everybody to understand that they know this exists now, and I, at the very least, go look at it for yourself and see it for yourself, and you'll become educated with that, to that respect. The Oregon Catholic Press, for example, again, in my opinion, the worst of anything inside the film, suicide messages, sex, demonic sex, and the swastika, ladies and gentlemen. I'll leave you with that, because two out of every three pews, two out of every three Catholic churches in the United States, there's merely...
Hold that thought. Well, Michael was just saying that two out of every three pews in Catholic churches across the country has material from the Oregon Press and the Oregon Catholic Press. And you want to look at it, and of course you want to try to begin to understand how to pick out the embedded images. They know what's there. They're playing games with your mind, and they're destroying your child's souls. Michael, God bless you. Thank you for everything you're doing, and we'll look forward to having you with us again here at Radio Liberty.
Thank you, Stan. Appreciate it.
Good night. God bless.
Right.
All right, fine. Well, that was Michael Colace, and he's, of course, the producer and the man who's really behind Rape of the Soul, and I had the privilege of playing a small part in that. And so when it's available on DVD, we'll be carrying it. Right now it's being shown at major theaters across America. And then, of course, I want you to know I didn't get paid for being on. I went and did what I did because, well, I believe in what Michael's trying to do. I think he's a very courageous individual. He's taking on powerful forces, both political and spiritual. And I think we should all pray. And I know I pray for Michael, and I hope you'll pray for his and his family for their provision and for their protection. Well, this is the time we need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you believe, as I do, we're involved in a spiritual battle, and of course, it's for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization, we hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And of course, if you do that by calling 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-544-8927. Our web's page is radioliberty.com. We do mention that we are offering full cases of my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, under the same terms that we've offered them before, and it certainly is an excellent opportunity to get a very powerful book. A powerful book that will explain to people the truth of what's really going on in the world today. How do you understand the demonstrations we're having all across America by people who are in our country illegally? Why has nothing been done to stop illegal immigration? Well, it's very, very simple. Are the leaders of both political parties really hate America? They want to merge us with Mexico and really with the rest of the Western Hemisphere, and this is simply a stepping stone along that way. That's why they don't guard our borders. That's why they don't enforce the laws make it a felony to knowingly hire people who are illegal aliens. All you'd have to do would be to arrest a few of the people from the major industries that are hiring the illegal aliens, and that would put an end to the whole thing. There would be no jobs. They'd all go home. But, of course, they're not going to be going home. They're going to stay here. Our leaders hate America. They want a multicultural, multilingual society. They would destroy our heritage, transfer our jobs, our factories, our wealth overseas, impoverish the American people. We are moving towards a feudalistic society in America with a ruling elite. And these ruling elite work through secret societies. I write all about them in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's the Brotherhood of Darkness. If you haven't seen it, you should. There's a video, the audio tape, my talk on the world revolution, my talk on planned population reduction. If you'd like to know more, call us at 1-800-544-8927. Get the facts. Check them out. Could it really be right? And if it is, what are you going to do about it? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for time being. We have with us on the line Tom Horn. And Tom is a minister. We carry a couple of his books here. One is certainly Spiritual Warfare. The other is The Gods That Walk Among Us. And Tom is well aware of the spiritual battle we talk about, but he's been writing recently about the effect of genetic engineering. Now, you know, when we hear about genetic engineering, people really, of course, cannot imagine what the scientists are able to do today. They can take, for instance, a gene from a fish. Fish can swim in icy water and not freeze, and they'll put that into a virus, and then they'll put it into a tomato, into another gene, and put it into a tomato plant so that the tomatoes won't freeze. They can actually take genes from one species and put it into another, and human genes and put them into mice, and animal genes and put them into human beings. And what we're really doing is having scientists who are playing God and destroying God's plan that each should reproduce according to his kind. And how long is God going to permit what's going on today? With that as a background, why, Tom Horn, thank you so very much for being with us.
No, Dr. Montes, thank you for inviting me on your program. And actually, I thought we were going to talk about the angel in the whirlwind.
Well, let's talk about the angel in the whirlwind tonight.
Well, and maybe we can tie that back into, because I'll tell you, one of the most interesting series that I ever did turned into a four-hour series that I did on transgenics and psychotronic warfare, and people didn't understand that there could actually be a military application, a military connection between psychotronically or psychologically manipulating the masses, and how that might play into transgenics, and maybe at some time we'll get on that subject. But I tell you, where the leaders of our country plan to take us in the very near future is as frightening as transgenics can get.
Well, I tell you what, this phrase, the angel in the whirlwind, really, doesn't that come from President Bush's inaugural speech?
Yeah, it does, much older than that. Here's the deal. News this week, Condoleezza Rice, as you know, telling us that time's running out for the United Nations to take action against Iran. Meaning maybe that we're getting ready to take the next step in a bigger, luminous plan for a new world order.
And, of course, what they're really going to do is plunge us into World War III, or at least the beginnings of World War III, because if we attack Iran or we allow Israel to attack Iran, we'll inflame the entire Muslim world, 1.25 million Muslims who hate America.
And I think that's exactly...
That's exactly what they want.
What's happening and what dates back to... The angel in the whirlwind, which was mentioned in George Bush's first inaugural speech, we are exactly where I thought we would wind up in 1990.
All right, fine. Well, where does this phrase, the angel of the whirlwind, come from? And, of course, this is mentioned, what, not once, but several times in that speech, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Okay, well, now, what does this mean? You know, it's a very descriptive term, but angel, whirlwind, how does it all fit together? Well, when we get back with Tom, we'll begin to explore this phrase. And, of course, this phrase did not originate with George Bush. He, as with so many other things, takes these phrases from elsewhere, and we can talk about some of the other things. He's talked about the fire in the minds of men. And, of course, that refers, of course, to Duff's gifts. He's a wonderful, certainly a story of the continuing world revolution. Well, Tom, why don't you pick up the story? What does the angel in the whirlwind denote?
I'll tell you exactly. In 1990, as the keynote speaker for the Religious Broadcasters Convention, And I'm not a prophet, but I predicted something. I said if Americans didn't wake up and teach its kids how to think, that we would have a dictator in this country in 10 years. I missed the date, Dr. Monteith, because I'm not a prophet, but not by much, I don't think, in that maybe I'm a futurist. And I want people to hear what David Lowe, the author of Earthquake Resurrection, wrote to me this past week. He heard an interview that you and I had done on the radio, and he emailed me and he said, Tom, he said, I heard you on Dr. Stan's show, and I was extremely intrigued by something you pointed out about Bush's 2001 inaugural speech prior to 9/11. You stated that he twice referred to the angel in the whirlwind. He said, I found the text of his speech, and I have confirmed what you said. He said, I also looked up the poem The Campaign by Joseph Addison, which you referred to, and was shocked by what I read in his speech. Bush said that he was quoting John Page when he said, we know the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong. Do you not think that an angel rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm? David Lowe goes on to say whether or not Bush meant it when he said he was quoting Page, the fact remains that Page clearly was quoting the poem by Addison, since Addison penned the poem before Page wrote his letter. And here's what Addison said. He said, when an angel by divine command with rising tempest shakes a guilty land, such as of late or Pell Britannica past, calm and serene, he drives the furious blast and pleases the Almighty's orders to perform, rides in the whirlwind and directs the storm. And then finally, David Lowe said, so the question for Bush would be, Tom, number one, who's the angel that he's talking about? Number two, what's the whirlwind and tempest in the storm? And number three, why did Bush twice refer to this quote, and why did he close his speech by saying, yes, an angel still rides in the whirlwind and directs the storm? Lowe finishes by saying, given what this administration both planned and carried out since 9/11, it's clear to me that the whirlwind was a campaign of terror on the citizens of the United States in order to stir up patriotic fervor, relinquishing of rights, and war tunnel vision. And the angel must be Lucifer, the angel of the light, the god of the skull and bones, Luciferians. Tom, thanks for pointing this out. I think it's huge, and I never heard it before. David Lowe, end quote. Well, Dr. Monteith, Lowe was referring, of course, to the interview you and I did a couple of weeks ago in which we had just started talking about, as a matter of fact, the connection between psychotronic warfare and transgenic science, the altering of human and animal DNA, and where that might be going, and does it have any connection potentially to super soldiers or mechanisms?
Hold that song right there, John.
All right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're just, Tom was just talking about the this whole idea of the genetic engineering and efforts to produce a super soldier, a soldier that can fight for days at a time without sleeping and without rest and sometimes even without food, genetically modified so that he would become a super soldier. What can they do with genetics? It's frightening what they can do with genetics today. So go ahead, pick up the story there.
Well, we were talking about how there might be a connection between what the military is funding in terms of future war, incredible manufacturisms of transgenic alterations of the species, and might there be any connection between that, military powers and other global leaders developing this thing. And in any case, I was referring to an interview you and I did, and I was just at the point in that last interview where I wanted to start making the case that not only might machines, super soldiers or whatever, interfere perhaps with the advancement of our civilization, and of course with psychotronics we're even talking about interfering with brain waves and light waves and sound waves, but that in addition to all of that, might the population be psychotronically psyopted, manipulated through the use of fear? And this goes to the statement by Bush beginning his first administration, his inaugural speech, talking about the angel in the whirlwind who hurls death and terror over the guilty land, and what some people now are calling the nuclear fear connection, how the whole countries might even be controlled or manipulated, paralyzed into following a path or supporting a government policy they might not otherwise choose to follow. Anyway, that was the course we were on in that last interview when I said to you, think back to 2001 when Bush was giving his inaugural speech, and twice in that 14-minute speech he asked the question, says the angel in the whirlwind still direct the storm. And back when Bush gave that inaugural, he had such strong evangelical support that, as you know, Raiders News Update, my news service, we get a lot of traffic over there every day, and we just had hundreds of Christians coming over there. They were all abuzz about his statement, and they wanted to know where the scripture was in the Bible about the angel in the whirlwind. And of course, we had to tell them that no such scripture existed, because Bush was in fact referring to John Page, the Virginia statesman who, after the Declaration of Independence was signed, wrote to Thomas Jefferson, and he said, "We know the race is not the swift nor the battle of the strong. Do not think an angel rides in the whirlwind directs the storm." By the way, John Page and Thomas Jefferson are both thought by most to be Illuminists themselves. But Bush was either quoting John Page or he was quoting Joseph Addison's 1705 poem, The Campaign, which talks about this angel that rides in the whirlwind. But if you read all of Addison's poem, and that's really important, and it's freely available on the internet for anybody that wants to read it, you find that the angel that he's talking about, who directs the storm, is hurling terror over the guilty land. And the question is, since Britain, of course, has been an ally of ours of late, who in the world was Bush referring to? Well, was he referring to the United States? Was he referring to Iraq? I don't know, and I don't even think it matters, because the point is the reference was received by adepts of esoteric knowledge as an acknowledgement of the powers of the air, the angel of the whirlwind, the archons and cosmo creators, whom the early church actually feared, and whom the Apostle Paul to the church at Ephesus said that our battle against those forces of the spiritual wickedness in the heavenlies is a war against the peace of our mind through fear manipulation. And isn't it interesting, Dr. Monteith, thinking about how psychological and psychotronic warfare are part of the current global manipulation of the masses, how this administration started its tour of office by acknowledging the angel in the whirlwind who hurls death and terror over the guilty land. Now, as you said a moment ago...
But of course, the guilty land is the guilty land, America.
Well, that's what I think, too. And as you said a moment ago, that was his first inauguration. Now, in his second inauguration, the last time around, a lot of people believe he was sending additional messages.
Oh, he really was. This is probably the most significant speech that's been given. In fact, certainly Dick Morris said this. This is the most significant speech I've ever heard. You know, and I've heard a lot of them. He said I've written a lot of the major speeches, but this was certainly the most significant and important speech. And I think it was. And I suspect that the 999 out of 1,000 Americans had no idea what he was really saying, and the occult statements that he was really making, foretelling what lies ahead for America.
Absolutely, and actually the occult establishment didn't miss it at all. And the reason why it was so important in particular is because midway through his last inaugural address, he actually began using what is ultra-revolutionary rhetoric. When he said this, he said, "Because we have acted in the great liberating tradition of this nation, tens of millions have achieved their freedom." By the way, you notice all this Hegelian use of phrases, but be that what it is, back to the quote, "And as hope kindles hope, millions more will find it. By our efforts, we have lit a fire as well." And here's the important statement, "a fire in the minds of men. It warms those who feel its power. It burns those who fights its progress. One day this untamed fire of freedom is going to reach the darkest corners of this world," end quote. There is no possible way, Dr. Monteith, that Bush's speechwriters could possibly have inserted that phrase without knowing its literary origin.
All right, what was the literary origin?
Well, it's Dostoevsky's novel that you referred to a moment ago, The Possessed.
Right, the fire in the minds of men. And, of course, the phrase comes from the book, and as the revolutionaries, this is, of course, is a novel, but as the revolutionaries are actually have set fire to the village, and the people in the village are trying to put water under the roofs of the buildings, you know, to stop the because they have thatched huts, and they're afraid the whole town will burn, and somebody shouts out, "You don't understand, the fire is not on the roofs of buildings, the fire is in the minds of men." And it was that same title that James H. Billington used for his book about the secret societies, the secret occult societies. For those of you who don't know, James H. Billington is the Librarian of Congress. We carry his book, even though he's a liberal, member of the Council on Foreign Relations. His book is seminal to any understanding of what's going on today. And the influence of the secret societies, which he writes about. This is the Librarian of Congress who's saying the historians have not told you the truth. This is all about the occult. It's not about the Enlightenment. It's not about Voltaire and Rousseau. It's all about the occult, a continuing revolution that began in 1776 and continues today. So go ahead.
Well, you're absolutely right. You actually just, I mean, you just nailed it. And there are other brilliant thinkers like you that got it. Pat Buchanan, his very next, what is his magazine called, The Conservative or whatever it is, I would remind your viewers to think back about Pat Buchanan's book, the magazine The Conservative. He had this big picture of George Bush giving his second inaugural speech, and right over the top of it, it says, "The Possessed." And that's because he knew exactly the literary origins of that statement, that it was set in this pre-revolutionary Russia, in which the author of that book is actually chronicling, even though it's a novel, he's chronicling the emerging revolutionary movement. And one of the main characters in his novel is based on the infamous nihilist Sergei Negev, whose aim was to actually create a revolution. And I want people that are listening to this to think about this. Think about what's happened in America since this current administration came to office. And then think about the phrases that were used in these inaugural speeches, and that many people did get it, and smart people saw it just as soon as it happened, exactly what it meant. And now think about what the book was about, because it was about making a revolution of such destructive power that society would actually be completely destroyed. Individual liberties would be completely destroyed. In fact, the strategy in that book is amazing, in that it actually spelled out how, first of all, a violent crackdown on all dissent. Does that sound familiar? A violent crackdown on all dissent under government control would be implemented, which then would spark an explosion of revolutionary violence among the masses. So that in Dostoevsky's novel, The Fire in the Minds of Men is not a yearning for liberty. When we're using these, warm-sounding phrases like, we're going to spread democracy around the world by building a fire in the minds of men, Dostoevsky's novel was a rejection of order. It's something that would only end in social destruction. And when you put those words in the mouth of George W. Bush, and I can't even pretend for a moment to believe, and I'm a Republican, by the way, I can't even pretend to believe that the president, giving an inaugural speech, had no clue as to those literary origins. When you put those words in the mouth of our president, you have to understand that this was not a commitment to freedom. This was actually a manifesto for social destruction. And it was given in the second inaugural. And that's the reason why, as you said a moment ago, Dr. Monteith, was picked up by so many experts in esoteric wisdom.
In fact, the second to the last paragraph of that speech, he makes this statement. What our founders declared, the new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. What our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. What is this new order of the ages? Well, you put it in, type it in Google, it comes back, Novus Ordo Seclorum, the emblem on the back of the dollar bill, beneath the unfinished pyramid. And what is the unfinished pyramid all about? Why it is the incomplete effort to create a world government. Above the unfinished pyramid, a triangle containing the eye of Lucifer. And when, of course, the pyramid, the new structure of society is completed, the Novus Ordo Seclorum is completed, why, of course, then the triangle settles onto the top of the unfinished pyramid, and we've accomplished the goal of the ancient mystery religions. Why would the president talk about the Novas, about the new order of the ages, the Nova Ordo Seclorum, and how many picked up what he was really saying? Well, Tom, you go ahead and pick the story up from there.
Well, I think the thing that invigorated me, and then I'm going to move on past this, but I think the thing that invigorated me about David Lowe emailing me is because he's a pretty smart guy. I mean, I've read his book. He's a sharp guy. He's a good thinker. And the fact that for the last decade, Raiders News Update, which is my news service, which reaches, well, an awful lot of people every day, at least 500,000 unique people a day, and according to some, far more than that, but is that I have had this uphill battle for the last decade because people look at me and they say, well, now, wait a minute, you're a conservative Christian, you're a Republican, how come you are not just completely on board with this current administration? And I've been trying to explain why I'm not and the problems that I see and where I fear that this administration is trying to take us and maybe where we are going. And but it's just been like shouting into the air. And so it was a pleasure to me that an evangelical like David Lowe, who is an author and an expert in his field, had heard me and you talking about this on the radio, did not take what we said just a carte blanche, but went out and did his own research and found out that what we're saying was exactly right. It was legitimate and it was historical, and it just excited me that he got it, he understood it, and it meant to me, of course, that our efforts at Raiders News Update maybe are not in vain, you know, that we're maybe that we're finally starting to get through to a few people, making the case that we were making that night and that we're making again tonight, that when you look at how manipulation, and in particular in this case fear, the angel and the whirlwind, how this continues to play a vital role in the current administration's war policy. It's war on terror. It's justifications for diminishing personal freedoms and government intrusions into every fiber of our lives. You begin to understand that fear tactics are being used to psyop, to scare the U.S. population into giving up its rights, to giving up its tax dollars, to support what otherwise would be an incredibly unpopular war. And I would tell people, compare what you've been hearing recently, by the way, to Franklin Delano Roosevelt's first inaugural address, where he said the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, and he went on to lead us out of World War II. But in any case, note how every time the fear level in the U.S. begins to diminish, and Americans start questioning the current foreign policy, which now has us looking down the barrel of Iran and World War III, which is so much more probable than most people can conceive tonight. Every time they start questioning it, suddenly the dead guy, Osama bin Laden, or somebody pops up in another video threatening Americans everywhere, and the fear card is psychotronically played again. And what I would tell people is if they have any question where the neoconservatives plan to take us next, look at the current presidential budget, the $1 trillion budget, which was just presented this last week, which is requesting like something like $440 billion more for defenses, $120 billion just more just for wars. We're talking about a war that we were promised originally wouldn't cost us more than $100 billion, and now economists are telling us that by the time you add up the cost of the war and care and treatment for our veterans to coming home wounded, it's going to be something closer to $2 trillion. But look at all of that, while at the same time look at the budget cuts, $39 billion in budget cuts.
Hold that thought right there. Right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Tom is simply pointing out the fact that we're being told, oh my goodness, we're doing such a great job, we're Republicans, we want to cut excessive spending, so they massively increase the amount of spending for the war and for Katrina and for the education and for, you know, the Medicare, unfunded Medicare drug bill. And then they cut a few, I think $39 billion. Oh my goodness, see what we've done. We've cut all these, this unnecessary fat. Well, the massive increase in spending. We put out more for our military, ladies and gentlemen, than the rest of the 20 next largest nations in the world together. Why do we need such a big military? Because the objective, the real objective, is for America to dominate the world. This is why we have troops in 130 240 nations, where we're building massive permanent bases in Iraq. They tell you we're going to bring our troops home in a year or two, and they're simply lying to you. We're going to be there forever. The Iraqis know that. The troops over there know that. It's just the American people don't know that. They simply lie to the American people over and over again. And, well, we don't want to believe that because we want to believe in our country. Well, I believe in our country, but I will tell you the darkest and most evil forces in the world today are working at the highest levels, not only the Republican Party, but the Democrat Party as well, plunging us headlong into a war in the Middle East and the loss of all of our freedom and the destruction of the freedom we've known here. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, and you know, I probably it needs to be a different interview from tonight just to talk about the budget, but frankly, it breaks my heart. You know what? It took 24 presidents over 200 years to get the United States $1 trillion in debt to foreign investment. And it has taken this president, for whatever it is, 5 or 6 years to get us, they're saying $8 trillion, some economists are saying as much as $11 trillion in debt, most of which is owned by foreign investment. And if people don't understand what that means in terms of how the rug could be pulled out of the U.S. economy, they simply need to go and give some thought to how divestment in this country could suddenly put us on our knees to much of the rest of the world. But I guess the point for me is, if you look at the budget, yeah, we did. We cut $39 billion, and all of that to Medicaid, Farm Aid, student loans, all these other social domestic issues, and yet the tax breaks in this budget to people earning more than $1 million a year, those tax breaks alone were enough to continue funding the domestic programs that would have continued feeding old women on Social Security who rely on people to bring them meals on wheels and things like that. But look, here's the thing. What that budget illustrated to me, I guess, is that you can envision by looking at it that these things are not deemed as necessary in the world where the current leaders are intending to take us. So then the question becomes, where are they envisioning to take us? Where is this administration and their angel in the whirlwind planning on taking the world, and in particular, in this case, the United States of America? And the best scholars of end times prophecy and those that study mystery, religion, adepts, and whether you believe in this stuff or not, it really don't matter as long as you understand that the people who believe in it sincerely. And it tells us that these rascals appear, for all intents and purposes, Dr. Monteith, to actually be trying to bring about the single global order of the end time. And I mean, whether we call it, as George Bush Sr. did, the New World Order, as Tony Blair does now, globalization, as Walter Cronkite did, world government, as George Bush Jr. calls it, international order, or as other people more accurately call it, the enlightened democracy of the spiritual hierarchy, call it what you will, it means the end of U.S. sovereignty. And I want to strongly encourage people to go right now, go tonight, go this week, and find a copy of the latest editorial by Dr. Stan Monteith. I think you can get it at newswithviews.com, and I don't know where else, and read The Secret Agenda, where Dr. Monteith, you explain so clearly and provide the documentation that proves that current U.S. foreign policy is actually designed to confuse the American people and national leaders who are unaware of the spiritual hierarchy's plan to establish an enlightened democracy among the nations of the world. One of the things that I appreciated so much about that article was your reminder to the rest of us that if you read the Declaration of Independence, we weren't even designed to be a democracy. Let's talk about that after the break.
All right, fine. Well, I appreciate the plug for our article. And, of course, you'll find it at newsreviews.com. That's newsreviews.com. And, of course, you can certainly find the list of my articles there. And it's over on the left side, and you can pull that down. Actually, it's our January newsletter. You can go to radioliberty.com and pull it down there for nothing and read it all the way through. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, they're trying to confuse us about what's really going on behind the scenes. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Tom Horn. Tom, go ahead and pick up the story there. And I do appreciate the plug for our article on newsreviews.com. It's called The Secret Agenda. It's in two parts. And then, of course, you can get our the entire article at radioliberty.com. I believe it's a January newsletter. But go ahead.
Oh, well, I wanted to know that. I mean, I read part one, I read part two, and we had this program coming up, and I thought, wow, he was, man, he was prophetically ahead of me, so now I know where I can get the rest of that that article. But yeah, I mean, the whole thing, talking about, you know, the angel in the whirlwind was a signal concerning foreign policy, and our foreign policy has changed so diametrically, our war policy has changed so diametrically under the current administration as to be prophetic. And that's the point, isn't it? It's prophetic. It's designed to confuse the masses who don't understand that there is a, not just physical, but there is a spiritual hierarchy who have a plan for global democracy for the end of time. And so many people get confused about that. And one of the things that I appreciated about your article was how you pointed all of us back to the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Federalist Papers, the Constitution of the 50 States. And you made the point that if you go back and read all of the above, you won't find one single reference to the United States being a democracy. Because the United States and its 50 states are republics, and that it is adepts of secret societies who want the American people to believe that the U.S. is a democracy. Now, isn't it true, Dr. Stan, that, and I know you're interviewing me, but I want to ask you this question. Isn't it true that the simple difference between the two, democracy and a republic, has to do with the surrender of sovereignty?
Well, basically, the whole idea of a democracy, it's majority rule, and whether it's majority rule simply by the people all voting or by our elected representatives can be, as long as the majority of them want to do something, they can do it. A republic is ruled by law, where the power of the government is to be restricted by the chains of the Constitution. Democracy simply gives politicians and or the people the ability to do whatever they want to. And when you do that, of course, you can take away the sovereignty, the freedom. You know, whatever the majority wants is the law of the land. Of course, in a republic, the individual has rights. And those rights come from God. In a democracy, your rights come from government. And so I suppose that the fact that we've lost our sovereignty would be a pretty good explanation for that. Hold just a moment. All right. Well, Dr. Stan here, our guest this evening, Thomas Horn. We're talking about the phrase, the angel in the whirlwind, that was used by George Bush twice in his first inaugural address. And in these inaugural addresses, he lays out clues for the adepts, the people who understand what's really going on, the members of the secret societies. Those people are dedicated to the one world government, the new world religion. When you understand that, and when you read them through very carefully, and you need to read them through and study them and say, what is he really talking about? And of course, I've learned so much by talking to Tom here about this phrase, the angel in the whirlwind, where it came from, and of course, apparently it came from a letter that was written to Thomas Jefferson by a man who was deeply involved in the occult, as was Thomas Jefferson, at least at a certain phase of his life, very deeply involved. Only, I think, as he grew older, did he begin to realize the fallacy of his ways. But pick up the story there, Tom.
Well, and of course, and we were talking about strongly encouraging people if they want to understand where the angel in the world went and this administration and its acknowledgement of those supernatural forces, those spiritual hierarchies, where they want to take us. And when you look at the changes in foreign policy and American policy in the U.S., you can see a firm dedication to going where the angel in the whirlwind wants to take us. If you want to really understand that, what I was saying is go this week and read The Secret Agenda by Dr. Stan Monteith. It explains clearly what has happened in terms of our foreign policy, and it has to do with the establishing of an enlightened democracy among the nations of the world. And I had asked you a question before the break about the difference between democracy and republic, and it was my very superficial interpretation that it mostly went to the root of sovereignty, but you were explaining it much more deeper than that in terms of the difference between democracy and majority rule and a republic where individuals have rights.
And God-given rights, and that is the what is so unique about our republic. Incidentally, we have an excellent little pamphlet. We call it "We Are a Republic," and we've recommended. It's got a lot of great information, so that you can really understand the difference between a republic and a democracy. Well, Tom, why don't we get your web page out there so people will know how to get in touch with you before we forget?
Oh, okay. They can get a hold of me through RaidersNewsUpdate.com. RAIDERS, just like the football team. RaidersNewsUpdate.com. And we'd love to have anybody that wants to come and visit us there. We have millions of people a day that come there, and we're very thankful to God for the growth that we've had. I'm very thankful to God that people are, it sounds like now, according both to the polls and the emails that we're receiving, people are finally starting to get it. But in terms of the difference between a democracy and a republic, so that we can keep moving forward, essentially then, Dr. Monteith, as you're educating me, your student here, democracy is a government of the majority who elect officials to rule over us and hopefully represent us, whether they do or not, at the federal level. And of course, you know, people then can be manipulated so that laws can be put in place to rule all of us, where in terms of a republic, the republic is one evidently whose political organization rests on the principle that the citizens themselves have individual God-given rights to constitute the root of sovereignty at the individual level as opposed to a federal rule. Is that correct?
That was right. And basically, under our republican form of government, what the federal government can do is very, very limited. Under republic, why, there are restrictions placed upon what our elected representatives can do. They may want to do all these things. They may even have all sorts of altruistic reasons for passing a legislation to give the people in New Orleans a lot of money. But there is no basis in our Constitution that allows the federal government to take money from people in California to give it to people in New Orleans because they have a problem. If people in California want to give that money, fine. And we certainly, we've contributed to all sorts of help for people, whether it be in New Orleans or the tsunami, you know, in Southeast Asia. But the thing is that it is not the function of the federal government to do that. We are a nation of law, or we were a nation of law. There are certain things the federal government could do, most things it could not do. And we've gone from being a republic under law with restrictions on what government can do to the federal government can do anything they want to, and usually they can depend upon the Supreme Court to go right along with it.
So this problem that you're pointing out and that you wrote about in your article, The Secret Agenda, which people can read at newswithviews.com, that evidently they can get the whole report your site, radioliberty.com. But now that appears to be part in my mind, and feel free to correct me at any point here, because I realize you're interviewing me and not vice versa, and I do apologize for that. But these were questions that I had in my mind today, because as I'm reading your excellent treatise, it was going directly to the heart of what I wanted to talk about in terms of the president's inaugural speeches and these messages that he's sending to people who are members of mystery religions, but that the Iraq war now appears to be part of this spread of global democracy, this spiritual hierarchy plan to establish so-called universal democracy and a cooperation of nation, a commonwealth of states, and so on. And one of the things that I noticed in your article was you quoted Manly P. Hall, who of course is considered one of the greatest philosophers in Masonry, and how that he explained in his book The Secret Destiny of America. In fact, let me just read this really quick. Just a short phrase here, if I may.
Go right ahead.
The Secret Destiny of America. This is quoted from your article. Quote, world democracy was the secret dream of the great classical philosophers. Toward the accomplishment of this greatest of all human ends, they outlined programs of education, religion, social conduct, directed to the ultimate achievement of a practical and universal brotherhood. One of the most ancient of man's constructive ideas is the dream of a universal democracy and a cooperation of all nations in a commonwealth of states. The mechanism for the accomplishment of this idea was set in motion in the ancient temples of Greece, Egypt, and India. So brilliant was the plan, and so well was it administrated, that it has survived to our time. End quote. Dr. Monteith, if President Bush and the men who control him, the neocons and others, if they're trying to carry out this ancient plan to establish world democracy under the coded language of spreading freedom and democracy around the world. Are the war party propagandists, are they trying to use military and tax dollars, financial power from the United States to actually confederate the world? I mean, is that what we're looking at right now?
That's what they really want to do, but before they can do that, they're going to have another massive war that is going to crush the spirit of the American people. And so whether it'll be the nuclear attacks on this country, whether it'll be a financial collapse, whether it'll be the massive demonstrations we are already seeing how they can mobilize the people who are here illegally and nothing's done. I mean, here are people who are in this country illegally, as my wife said, look, all these people are here illegally. Let's get 20,000 buses, round them up. They're all there, right there. We can grab them and send them right back across the border. Are we going to do it? Of course not. Because, of course, our leaders want this sort of thing. They want the chaos. They want the conflict. And, of course, it's out of the dialectic of this opposing forces that will come the New World Order. As far as what's going on in the Middle East, I think of Michael Ledeen said this best in an article he wrote in the Wall Street Journal on the 30th of October of 2001. That's a little over a month after the 9/11 attack. And he said the battle, you know, against Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda is simply an opening salvo in a great battle to transform the Middle East. And that's what it's all about.
And so it's confederating the world under a single umbrella. How prophetic could that possibly be?
And, of course, they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people. They want us to think we're involved in a war on terrorism. And, of course, my next newsletter, my February newsletter, which is already out, points out that the war on terrorism is as phony as a $3 bill. We never tried to get Osama bin Laden. In fact, he may already be dead. But it doesn't matter. They can always show his picture on television. They can always come up with another video or with an audio tape and say, well, the CIA has confirmed that's Osama bin Laden. He could have been dead years ago. We don't know. Everything, of course, is created for us. But we need an enemy. And, of course, the enemy now is increasingly becoming not Osama bin Laden, but Iran. The leaders of Iran want the Third World War. Our leaders want the Third World War. The average American is horrified at the idea. But it doesn't matter what the American people think. There is an elite that controls both political parties and controls our media and controls our reality. And they will, under one circumstance or another, I'm firmly convinced, justify going to war. And if it turns out to be a terrible catastrophe, they'll say just what they're saying now. Oh, we had bad intelligence. Oh, we feel so sorry about what's happened. But you just follow us, just trust us. Why, we wouldn't lie to you, because after all, we're a Christian administration. And what we're doing, of course, is we're doing God's work. We're bringing democracy. Democracy, ladies and gentlemen, is dictatorship. It always had been. You go back and read what Plato wrote. Plato, writing in the Republic, says, democracy always degenerates into despotism. Our leaders know that. They're followers of the Platonic ideas. They use the term democracy, really talking about dictatorship, and that's what it's about.
Well, let's talk about that. This is the passion that began with the Nephilim and their worshippers at the Tower of Babel.
Right.
And these guys today are not even trying to hide. That's the stunning part. I mean, when you put it in an inaugural speech, for crying out loud, they're not even trying to hide what they're planning. In fact, they're openly sending signals back and forth to each other with the words that they use, almost as if they're mocking the rest of us for our ignorance. Have you noticed how both the U.S. President and Prime Minister Tony Blair lately have been talking openly in the air about their intentions to globalize and the political and commercial affairs of the world's nations? You listen to the State of the Union address by President Bush, you get a glimpse of how our political leaders are immersed in this philosophy of globalism. And then just this last week, Tony Blair gave a major speech on internationalism and the reason, he said, for Britain and America's involvement in Iraq. And in that speech, he said this. Let me quote him because his words are better than mine. He says, "This is not a clash between civilizations. It is a clash about civilization. We is not the West. We are as much Muslim as Christian or Jew or Hindu. We are those who believe in religious tolerance, openness to others, to democracy." But then, Dr. Monteith, end quote, having just said those words, he added this startling statement. He said, "The only way to win is to recognize this phenomenon is a global ideology. The events in Iraq, Afghanistan, Kosovo, Sierra Leone, as well as climate change and poverty in Africa are all linked, and that there are about 40 to 50 countries, I'm still quoting him, 40 to 50 countries that might require interventionist action in order to obtain global prosperity and stability," end quote.
Well, would you mind sending that to me? I would love to have that.
I will. So that in other words, brother, we're going to give them democracy whether they want it or not.
And it's all about world government, and we are going to force this, and we're going to put into power the dictators if we want. They will be dictators who go along with our agenda under the guise of, well, this is democracy. Let's go to Dale, who's calling from Carmel. Hi, Dale, who's been waiting patiently. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, quick question. It's always behooved me the title that's used in China as the People's Republic, and I was wondering if you could touch on that subject briefly so I can share with others.
Well, what they do is they just try to confuse us. They use words to throw us off the track. Basically, of course, the republic is what we want. What sort of republic do they have in China, which is a brutal tyranny? You need to go back and read the writings of our founding fathers. And let me suggest my pamphlet, We Are a Republic, to get the background and to understand that so much of what goes on today is to confuse us. And when they talk about democracy, we're not a democracy. When they called Russia the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics or the Republic of China, it's all part of the game. They do not want you to know the real difference between a republic and democracy and why our founding fathers insisted on founding a republic.
I see. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And let's go to, we've got, is this Dan from Southern California?
This is Mike here.
Oh, this is Mike. Okay, Mike, go ahead.
Just one small contribution to the program tonight. Thank you very much. Back to the inaugural speech. About halfway or so through, he seems very confused about his spirituality. He talks about self-government relies in the end on the governing of the self. That edifice of character is built in families, and sustained in national life by the truth of Sinai, the Sermon on the Mount, and the words of the Quran.
And then, of course, all the other, and they add there at the end,
the
all the other religions that are represented in the United States. And you wonder why he's going to the words of the Quran, you know, when he's the president of the United States. And he keeps telling us that we all worship the same God. We do not all worship the same God.
Yeah, I just want to bring it up for those who still think he's a Christian.
Okay.
All right.
God bless. Thanks so very much, Mike.
All right.
All right. Do you have any thoughts about what the callers had said, Tom?
No. Only that they were absolutely correct, and that this is what we've been preaching at RagersNewsUpdate.com. I mean, I can't tell you, Dr. Monteith, how much criticism up until the last year we took. I mean, I had very devout, conservative Christian ministries, some of them very large, who were associated with Raiders News Update, who stopped linking to the stories that we did because they thought we had fallen off the deep edge over there, and we continued to say, but look, just look at what you're seeing. Look at what's happening. I mean, just because a person pays lip service to a couple of hot item political issues, let's say pro-life, and they say, I'm pro-life, and then they invade a sovereign country, and you have thousands of Americans as well as thousands of people who belong to a sovereign country being destroyed. You have to question, are they really pro-life? I mean, those are the kind of questions we were asking that brought a great deal of heat onto us over the last few years.
Well, of course, you have to do what you think is right, Tom, and we do the same thing. And we are not going to compromise. I've had some of our supporters who just cut off support. That's all right. You do what you have to, because we're answerable not to our supporters, we're answerable to God.
Yeah, but now it's going to come around.
You mean they're beginning to realize, of course, what you're saying is true.
They're beginning to see it, and we're happy for that.
And I think that there's a lot of great good things that are happening now. The important thing is we get the truth out. It doesn't matter what the two people believe us now. One day they're going to know this is true. Well, Tom, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. The hour has just flown by, but let's pick up the story.
Okay, and by the way, because I know we're not going to get there, the next time I'm on your radio program, if we do another program on this issue, we need to talk about Albert Pike's letter to Mazzini concerning the three world wars, because I think that's exactly where we're going. But I just think that people need to understand that when they're talking about, and I am a Republican, but when you're talking now in the current climate about the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, the truth is there's only one party in D.C. now, and that's the Globalist Party. And if you don't believe it, check out the people who are members of the Council on Foreign Relations.
And the Trilateral Commission as well, and the Bilderbergers. And certainly these people have a different agenda. And those of you who haven't read David Rockefeller's memoirs, you really need to get it on page 405. He says, you know, some people think I and my family are part, of a cabal that is conspiring with people throughout the world to build a new international order. And if that is the charge, I want to tell you, I plead guilty. I am a proud internationalist. And I'm paraphrasing, but that's just about what it is. He's admitting he's part of a cabal that is interested in creating a new international order. And he says, yeah, I plead guilty. This is exactly what I'm doing. The most powerful man in the world today, the richest man here in the United States. And if you honestly believe that Bill Gates and Warren Buffett are the two richest men in the world, you've been listening to Rush Limbaugh for too long. go ahead there, Tom.
Well, I listen to Rush Limbaugh, too. I wish he wasn't just shilling all the time for the administration. Look, ever since the events of 9/11, there's been a burning unrest, an instability between Israel and the Arabic world, and the West, for that matter. And it is perfectly in line with what Albert Pike outlined in his letter to Mazzini concerning the three world wars. People would be amazed. Just go and read that letter. Maybe you and I will get a chance to talk about it in the future. I know we're running out of time, but it's unfolding before our eyes. People can dispute the accuracy of Pike's letter, but it is stunning how accurate he was. And his letter was written long before the current conflict, and world events are unfolding right now.
And I really think you're absolutely right. I think that it's only a matter of time before there will be some sort of a confrontation in Iran and whether it'll be Israel, whether it'll be the United States, or the two of them together. But of course, it's going to trigger off a series of events that will end with catastrophe, both for the Middle East and America. Good night, Tom. God bless you.
God bless you, Dr. Monteith. I want people to buy my book, The Ahriman Gate, but I really want them to read The Secret Agenda by Dr. Monteith.
Let's support
Radio Liberty.
All right, fine. Well, let's just quickly tell them about Ahriman Gate. Where can they get it?
RaidersNewsUpdate.com.
RaidersNewsUpdate.com. God bless. Thanks very much.
God bless you, Dr. Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course, if you'd like to get Tom's excellent book, it's The Ahriman Gate, and you can get it at RaidersNewsUpdate.com. That's RaidersNewsUpdate.com. And then, of course, this is the time when I have to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we certainly look forward to some of you out there joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Because that's how we're able to do it. We do 5 hours a day as we reach out across America by radio, by internet, by shortwave, by satellite. But it's an expensive proposition. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you're interested in getting a complete case of our books, and we're offering them at the same rate as we have previously, if you're interested in getting a complete set of the books, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We won't be able to make the offer again until we're going to do another printing, but we're almost there. We do hope that some of you will get a case of the books, and you can sell them. You can certainly give them away. You can lend them out. But we need to reach people with an understanding we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. We do carry Tom Horn's books entitled The Gods Who Walk Among Us and Spiritual Warfare. We think they're both excellent books. That's The Gods Who Walk Among Us and Spiritual Warfare. And then, of course, if you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to do that. You need, of course, to get the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence. We've kept this book in print for many years. Why? Because it explains how the great tax-exempt foundations, Ford, Carnegie, Rockefeller, 50 years ago were financing communist organizations. And who do you think is financing the communist organizations today? Who's behind the illegal immigrant movement? Why, of course, the Ford Foundation. They're financing Lulac and Moldave. And we even carry a book called Importing Revolution, is written by a congressional aide who goes into the fact that the Ford Foundation is one of the major financiers of this movement, and believe me, the communists are working there. But you see, communism has always been a shell. It has been something that we had to have an enemy to rally the people behind our government. For as Plato had written so well, when the tyrant has defeated the enemy by conquest or by treaty, he always is then out fighting a new enemy so he can rally the people behind him. It's a terrible thing to say, but this is the way that things really work. There is a ruling elite that controls both political parties. If you don't believe me, get our video, get your audio tape, get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Read about it, and read what Bill Clinton's mentor, Professor Kara Quigley, said about the two-party system. Understand it's as phony as a $3 bill. And, of course, at the last election, you had two members of the same secret society of Skull and Bones running for the presidency. And if you don't know what Skull and Bones is, you need to get our four-tape set on Skull and Bones. The Bushes belong to the Bohemian Grove. You need to get our four-tape set on that. And pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty.